This podcast is brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Keep Joy on air by becoming a member, a subscriber, or donate. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.
Australia's number one award-winning show for exploring sex, sexuality, and self.
Hide and seek.
Visit joy.org.au/hide and seek.
As we go along, let us study the male anatomy. Most men know less about their own bodies than they do about their automobiles.
The following feature has been rated R.
Don't panic.
This program contains coarse language.
It is recommended for people aged 15 years and over.
Are you ready? Sit back, turn up the volume, and enjoy our show.
Welcome.
Get ready for the ride.
Hide and seek. Hide and seek.
Good evening and welcome to your show that explores sex, sexuality and self. My name's Dean Beck. Joining me tonight, the very gorgeous Benny B.
Oh, it's great to be here, Dean.
And we have the work experience
the
kid
work
still
experience
with us.
Mark, boy.
Welcome to you.
Thank you. Thank you. Good to be back.
Great to have you with us. We've got a very great show for you tonight. And I'm glad I'm surrounded by two younger gentlemen to be able to put this into perspective, because we'll be talking about young people and porn.
Love it when you call me young.
Yeah, Robert, you're not quite there anymore, are you? But in my mind, you are. I've been listening to you on our podcasts. Big shout out to David, who's done a tremendous job with our podcast too. Still up there with the numbers there, Benny.
But yes, I see
people
that.
People are tuning in. So I heard you, Mark, on those podcasts. Sounding good, mister. Sounding good.
I try hard.
We will be talking about young people and pornography. Kids and porn. But not kiddie porn.
Yes.
Not kiddie porn. We're not talking about that.
We don't want
talking about kids and porn. We're going to be joined by Dr. Megan Lim from Burnett's Deputy. She's Burnett's Deputy Program Director of Behaviours and Health Risks. How our behaviours influence the outcomes for our health and well-being.
And she's a porn expert, did you say?
Well, she's done a lot of research into it.
I'd love that would look great on a resume, wouldn't you say? Porn expert?
Not when you put children anywhere near that.
No, but we're not going near that.
No, we're not. Time for the news. It's interesting. Vegetables are fighting back, Benny
Vegetables
B.
Vegetables are fighting back.
We have discovered in the far-flung outback of Australia, horny African cucumbers.
Sounds delicious.
They're African cucumbers with horns. A retired Griffith farmer was shocked to find a spiky traditional African food in her backyard. Marlene Butler, 74, noticed a strange vine sprouting in her garden around mid-December last year. The vine has produced extremely spiky yellow fruit. She's taken into the Area News food critic Wendy Sweeney.
Of course.
And Wendy had this to say.
Wow. How's it taste, Wendy? Talk
it
us through it.
It does look like a cucumber seed, doesn't it?
Yeah, you can taste it. I would say I'll let those go golden because that's when it's got the
Can you describe
wine.
The taste, please, Wendy?
Like cucumber.
Cucumber!
Who would have thunk it?
Very, very mild, though. Nice.
Is it sweet, though? Banana? What about the banana taste?
But it says when it's golden, it's only still golden.
It mightn't be real ripe yet.
It's not ripe yet, no, because when it is ripe, it's said to have passion fruit, lime and banana sort of flavours to it.
Lovely. All right.
Thank you very much for that, Marley.
Thanks for that, yes.
And Wendy.
In other news, a gay orgy at Cardinal's apartment has been raided by Vatican police.
I beg your pardon?
That's just what I said. Vatican police have raided the home of a cardinal interrupting a drug-fueled gay orgy. Police entered the apartment last month after complaints from neighbours. When police showed up at the cardinal's apartment, they reportedly found drugs and a group of men engaged in an orgy. The occupant of the apartment, a priest who serves as a secretary to Cardinal Francesco Coccopomiaro, was arrested and taken for questioning.
The question is not whether there are priests that are gay. And in more serious news, recently was announced that Victoria has been the nation's amphetamines capital. Well, the United Nations and the World Health Organization have issued a call for drugs to be decriminalised. In a joint release that was framed around health outcomes in the HIV sector, the UN General Assembly Secretary General, Antonio Guterres, called for the tackling of the problem to be prevention and treatment-based, adhering to human rights. Well, he is the guy who in Portugal, as Prime Minister, changed the laws over there to be a decriminalised program around drugs, and Portugal saw its drug fatalities fall to the lowest in Europe and their HIV rates plummet.
Big call. So
the guy knows what he's on about.
Yeah.
That's it for Hide and Seek News. Now, we are talking about young people and porn. I want to know when you, Benny B, first accessed porn. When did you first see porn?
This might be like saying that I'm old. I think some friends, and you know what it was? We family moved into a new house and I found some magazines in the attic.
Yeah, how old were you?
Probably like eight.
Eight.
Yep.
Right. Mm. Mark, how old were you?
Well, I was 14. It coincides with when I first got internet access.
See, different world.
This is the...
Well, back in the 1860s, we had to head down to the paper depot, dive into the bins that had all the magazines in it, and sift through the women's weeklies before we could find anything. I can tell you, we did find a few things. I was about 10 at the time. So this is Hide and Seek on Joy 94.9.
Dance like you could, dance like you would. Movie star. Rock your body like a porn star, that's what you are. That's right, show me.
Thank you.
Hi, this is Dan Savage, and you're listening to Hide and Seek on Joy.
Oh, Barry, I am coming for you.
I like your spunk.
Well, you don't have to rub it in. Inappropriate. You think?
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek.
Hide and seek. Joy 94.9.
Team Beck, Benny B. We've got the work experience kit here, Mark.
We do.
And we're joined by the woman who has created waves in the media in the last week. I tell you what, everybody's reporting this. Dr. Megan Lim, welcome to you.
Hi, Dean.
You are Burnett's Deputy Program Director of Behaviours and Health Risks.
Correct.
And you've been looking at porn and kids.
Yeah.
Although they weren't kids when you were looking at them.
No, they were all over 15 in our research, so... Yep.
That must be a difficult space to work in, doing
it is,
research
yeah.
on children and porn.
Especially when people introduce you as having been looking at porn without including the word research.
Well, even then.
Yeah. It is definitely a controversial topic. You know, we really need to be doing this research with children even younger than 15, because the average age we found that kids are exposed to porn is about 13, and that's for intentionally viewing porn. For accidentally finding it, it's even younger, sort of 11 years old. So really, if we want research to capture it.
How is this possible with all of these filters and this, you know, nanny sitters and all of that?
Yeah, I guess, A, not everyone has filters, and B, they don't always work that well.
And if anyone knows how to get around them.
Exactly.
The kids do. All men watch porn, and they do it almost daily.
Yeah, well, not all of them, but... Most of them
they
are watching daily.
Start watching it at 13.
Mm-hmm.
They watch it mainly by themselves, and they stream it or download it.
Mm-hmm.
Their first sexual encounter is at 16, and their first intercourse is at 18. Pretty much.
Yep.
For women, their first intercourse is at 16. Now, that was interesting.
Yeah. It might be a bit biased because we have recruited a lot more women.
Or and boys might just brag about it more.
Yeah.
Yeah, how much is the truth?
Yeah. And of course, like, yeah, there's issues with sort of the classification of intercourse, because quite a lot of the sample were queer, and yeah, it doesn't necessarily fit with their sexual behaviour.
So for the purposes of tonight's show, let's focus on the guys in general and I guess the queer element of your research.
Mm-hmm. So why do we need to do this study?
Yeah, good question. I mean, a lot of people have said, like, well, wasn't that obvious? Didn't we already know that? And, yeah, it's. I mean, that's what everyone said, that, yes, we already knew that, but now I've got proof that it, it really is that widespread among men, yeah.
There's been a lot of chatter around research to young people and porn. How does yours add to that rather than compete with that?
Yeah, so I guess we've been able to actually do this survey, which is actually the first survey that's been done of young people in Australia for nearly 10 years that's kind of captured a lot of detail.
And a lot's changed in 10 years.
Yeah, it really has. Yeah. And so as well as this study, we're doing some more research, kind of in-depth interviews with young people and with parents as well, parents of young children. So, yeah.
How are they viewing it? Did you look at different ways in how they're viewing it? I mean, I'm thinking, like, these days every kid's got a smartphone, right? So
they don't know what a DVD is anymore.
Exactly.
Yeah, it was almost all streamed and downloaded online. I was kind of surprised, actually, though, that slightly more people were watching it on computers than on phones. But I was expecting more phones.
Right. Okay. That's interesting. Benny B, we've had a message come through on 0427JOINT949. We'd also like to know how old you were when you first saw porn. This message.
Okay. The first message says, my first porn, I was 14 and found my brother's VHS tape. The porn was called Edward Penis Hands. I think I've seen that one.
So we're talking about outdated technology. I referred to magazines earlier. But
that's all right.
It's all downloaded or streaming. Mm. Define the difference there and why we need to, I guess, isolate the two.
You mean between downloading and streaming? Well,
one you save and the other is disposable, I guess.
Yeah, pretty much. We didn't actually specify the difference in our study. I'd assume most people are just streaming, but don't really know.
Easier to hide it.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
But if you really like it, you've got to find it again.
You think,
sorry.
Yes.
Sorry, yeah, just.
Let's start with the basics. You asked how old they were.
Yeah.
You asked how much they'd seen in the last 12 months.
Mm-hmm. How often they viewed it, yeah.
How often they did. And how did they normally do it, streaming or downloading, mm-hmm. etc. Or did they do it with somebody
mm.
or by themselves?
Yeah. So, I mean, I guess we were mostly interested in that question actually for women, because there's a lot of people saying that women only watch porn because their boyfriends make them.
Yep.
Or to impress their boyfriends. But what we found was women were also mostly watching on their own. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Right, but they engage at an older age, yeah?
Yeah, a bit older and a bit less, less commonly, yeah.
And for the guys, it's just almost daily.
Yeah.
But, like, this is at a time when your hormones are racing mm. around.
Mm-hmm.
You're horny as hell anyway. Thank God they've got an outlet.
Yeah. Well, yeah, it's there's a lot of issues with pornography. There's both positives and negatives of it. And I guess my research is trying to really understand whether overall it's causing long-term problems
yeah,
and
yep.
Harm to children to be viewing that much pornography.
So let's talk about some of those issues.
Mm-hmm.
Let's look at health risks. That's mm-hmm. your area. What sort of health risks were or the outcomes?
Yeah. So in our study, we found that people who reported a mental health problem recently were more likely to watch porn and had viewed porn more frequently. And we can't say that one's causing the other. It might be that watching pornography causes mental health problems, possible, but it's also possible that people with poor mental health are more likely to view pornography for whatever reason.
Because it makes them feel good.
Yeah,
it gives
possibly.
Them a dopamine hit
yeah.
And a rush and
yep.
whatever. Interesting. Is it an upper or a downer in that respect?
Yeah, well, I mean, there's been people are starting to do brain studies and comparing it to drugs in a way that, you know, it gives you the endorphins, but then, you know, you get addicted potentially. But yeah, this is all really early stage research, so can't really say for sure.
But we can't stop it. And I wonder whether if we educated our young people to understand it, compartmentalise it, put it into the right space from the outset, whether the outcomes would be very different.
Possibly, yeah. I mean, when you say you can't stop it, yes, it would be pretty difficult to stop a really motivated older teenager from mm-hmm. seeking mm-hmm. out porn, but you probably can stop children from finding it accidentally, or maybe delay the age at which they first see it using filters and, you know, parent control.
Mm.
But I wonder whether even in that space, education is a better way forward anyway, because the minute you put something to a kid that is do not touch,
mm.
you're going to mm. find a way to touch.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. And one of the really concerning things about filters is that they also block a lot of really positive things. So there's been research showing that filters particularly block a lot of health information, particularly sexual health information, and they're also much more likely to block things that provide comprehensive sexual education, like talking about condoms, and even more likely to block things that refer to non-heterosexual sex. So it's very concerning.
Dr. Megan Lim is with us from Burnett Institute. We're talking about young people's access to pornography, that area of LGBTI people sexual education, if you want to call yep. it that, learning. Well, there's nothing in that regard really other than safe schools. but if you put that to one side, there's nothing in that space. So it's no wonder people gravitate towards it to try and get an understanding of it.
Yeah.
And we're seeing LGBTI people coming out younger and younger.
Yeah.
It all fits. Mark, you know a little bit about this from your work with the wonderful people at Minus 18.
Mm.
Education around sex is really missing, isn't it?
It's been lacking for, well, forever, really.
Mm-hmm.
And you're right. People turn to pornography to sort of get an idea as to how to have intercourse with somebody of the same sex.
It's pretty base level stuff.
Mm.
Yeah.
And it turns you on. So, mm. you know, is it any wonder?
Yeah. I mean, and a lot of people also have said in our studies that, you know, they weren't sure if they were gay or straight or what they were attracted to, and watching porn made them go, oh, okay, that's what I like. That's
right.
the sort of person I'm attracted to.
Kind of sorted it all out
yeah.
for them.
And so were you looking in the study to like the types of porn that people were watching? Have you seen a Rihanna film clip? Like, for that's it's pretty much porn already.
Nicki Minaj, hello.
Yeah. So we haven't specified that kind of detail. We're assuming that people know what we mean when we say porn, that it's not Game of Thrones or something like that. But yeah. We also asked about a whole range of different behaviours that people had seen in pornography. Like,
okay,
you know, how often do you see anal sex? How often do you see kissing? How often do you see condoms? Those sort of things.
And anal sex was a bit of a outcome, wasn't it?
Yeah, so in our study we found that people who watched porn more often were more likely to have had anal sex. Possibly an association with... you know, people who are just more interested in sex and more open to different things are more likely to watch porn.
Chicken and egg.
Yes.
Wanna see you get nasty. Wanna see you shake it down, babe.
This is Hide and Seek here on Joy 94.9. I'm Benny B. Dean Beck is with me, as well as work experience boy Mark. And we have in the studio Dr. Megan Lim from the Burnett Institute. And we're talking tonight about kids and porn and kids and their exposure to porn. Pretty, I guess, interesting topic.
When it affects their head, apparently, not their pelvis.
Well, if you think about the evolution of porn as well, I guess... as we were talking before about our young experience, a crappy old VHS tape or a magazine is different to what they can see today, which is bareback groups, people that have just...
anal...
slammed or doing...
cream coppers pies, fisting the whole works.
So pretty out there stuff for the youngins.
Keep in mind that in this country you have to be 18 years or older to view any of this stuff.
Of course.
And yet...
but...
we all know, click of a button and you're there.
Hmm.
And it's not being circumvented by these filters.
Nope.
Do you, Dr. Megan Lim, think that these filters are something that should be employed, or do you think that we should be educating people to deal with this?
Well, I think filters have their place in some, particularly for stopping children from finding it accidentally. But yes, education is really going to be the answer in the long term. And, I mean, better sex education is going to be a good thing anyway.
A Swedish study said that nearly 20% of daily pornography users had depressive symptoms.
Mm.
Well, the other 80% were having a ball.
Yeah.
What do we need to be watching for, I guess, with our young people? What should we be looking for in this space, in a responsible space?
Yeah. In terms of identifying whether people have problems, I guess pornography can become a problem if it replaces real life sexual experiences. If people are having problems having intimacy with a real partner because they're just thinking about pornography all the time, and also if it becomes something that, you know, you have to do every day that you can't.
And I guess it's the same for adults, isn't it?
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Yeah, that's when it's impacting your day-to-day operations,
But if you're, say, 14, 15, should you be having...
your day-to-day operations are.
Exactly. I mean, should you be going out there and finding a partner?
Well, I mean, yeah, that's a good question.
You mean instead of?
Yeah.
Well, I mean instead of, but...
Mm. Traditionally 14, 15-year-olds usually wouldn't have any sexual experience, I guess, or very limited. But now they're, you know, they have a lot of sexual experience through pornography. So I think pornography is different than sex that most people have. So
certainly at that age. I mean, you're sort of trying to find your feet at that age, whereas you're, you know, you're watching porn and porn is very polished. It's designed to be something that's, you know, it's there to get you off.
Yeah.
And it's a perfect encounter. I mean, nobody has perfect encounters when you're a teenager.
No.
Oh, when you're a teenager. You threw that in the end there. And I guess it's only going to get worse, is it? Like, I see like a baby in a pram with a, and I, you know, parents just give them the iPad these days to play a game. Just from the youngest age we're giving children technology in the palm of their hands.
I guess what worries me is some innocuous searches can sometimes deliver things that are NQR.
Yeah, definitely. And even, you know, kids hear the word sex. And when I was a kid, I had heard the word sex so many times and I'm like, what the hell is it? Why do people keep talking about it?
Or
and
whispering about
yeah,
it.
Yeah, and, you know, you'd say it at school and everyone would laugh at you and you didn't know why. But now people go, oh, what's sex? I'll just Google it. And then, ah, it's like, yeah.
The thing I find interesting in your report is that LGBTI people are accessing it for a lot of it for more educational purposes than just getting off. Like their straight mate counterparts are not doing it for that reason.
Well, no, everyone sort of, not everyone, but a lot of people did say that they were getting education out of
it. Or that's at least what they said to you.
Yeah. maybe it's just trying to justify something, but yeah, it was definitely a very common thing that people said. Maybe they weren't deliberately seeking out for education, but they had learnt from it.
What would porn education look like?
There are actually some really good educational, X-rated educational titles out there, but they're not, you've got to go looking for them. They don't just pop up in your feed.
Yeah, and I think that's one of the issues with porn. There's heaps of great porn out there that's, you know, ethical and, isn't derogatory to women. But it's harder to find amongst the billions of other videos, and often because, you know, it is ethically produced porn, you have to pay for it. And why would you pay for something that you can get for free?
What was the youngest that someone reported accessing porn?
Well, we didn't actually ask for a specific age. We just said less than 10 kind of being the youngest.
And what percentage said that?
I think it was about 10%.
Okay.
Under 10.
Substantial. You put the reach out to over 1,000 participants, so it's a fairly comprehensive study in this space. Like all good studies, it finishes with, we need to do more studies. now, as I would expect, what do you want to do in further researching this?
Yeah, so the survey we did was just cross-sectional, so it's just taking one point in time, so we can't say, you know, which came first, the mental health problem or the porn. So what we want to do next is a kind of longitudinal study, so over time, and ideally we would be able to recruit children from probably 10 years old.
How do you do that?
I was just going to say, how do you bring up that topic with the parents?
Yeah, it is hard.
Not even that. How do you get 10-year-olds to articulate it when we haven't given them the language to articulate?
Yeah, and that's one of the things we're trying to work out at the moment. We're doing kind of this pre-research that we're talking to parents about.
I'm glad it's your ethics committee.
Yeah. So far, we're limiting it, just talking to parents. But one of the things we're asking them is, how could we talk to your kids about this? Like, what would be acceptable? Yep. How could we go about it? What's sort of the limit to what we could ask them?
And then, have their parents even had this conversation, any sort of sex conversation with them prior to this?
I'd like to know what poor mental health means in this space too, because it could mean a lot of things. You know, dad's an alcoholic. What's that got to do with me having a wank?
Yeah. So in our study, we just asked people if they'd had depression, anxiety, or another mental illness in the past 6 months. So that was our definition, but there's been lots of other ways of measuring it used.
And, I guess kids these days have got a better understanding about mental health than when I was growing up. At least there is a language around that these days that there wasn't once before.
Yeah, but I think around half of our participants said that they had a mental health problem in the last 6 months, so it was very common in our sample, probably more so than in the general population.
I guess, Mark, have seen this with some of the work that you've done, but that doesn't mean that we all have to have a mental health issue if we're LGBTI, for example.
No.
Or that if we access porn that we have a mental health issue either.
No, but being LGBTI does mean that we're more likely to have a mental health issue. The question would be, you know, are you accessing porn because you have a mental health issue, or are you developing a mental health issue because you're... And that's the thing I think I find
the chicken and egg again.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Joy 94.9.
You are with the Work Experience Kid, the old fart, and the sexy one. We are speaking with Dr. Megan Lim. We're talking about young people and their access to pornography. You've had a lot of press about this research that you've done. I guess, you know, it's going to be gravitated towards, makes good headlines. Mm. What's your analysis of the press that you've received?
I guess for me, it's kind of strange because we actually did this research more than a year ago. So I kind of always get surprised that people still find it so exciting. But it only just came out on Friday, and yeah, heaps of press, like radio interviews and news and television. It's definitely the most attention I've ever got for a research project before. And I guess it's just the sexy topic, porn and kids.
And you were saying that some of the imagery that goes with this coverage is interesting.
Yeah. So, like, every story that I've seen, the image that will come with it will be, like, maybe a DVD or a magazine, or, like, maybe a picture of a girl in a bikini or something, as if that's what sort of porn really looks like. But
busty blonde cum guzzlers or something like that.
Yeah, you know. So one of the things that... that's quite easy to access for young people is information about vanilla sex. But if you're into kink, porn can be the sex education that you receive. Did you touch on that at all within the research?
Yeah. So some interesting things that people are saying that porn's kind of a safe space to explore things that, you know, they're not sure they like and that might actually be uncomfortable, even dangerous in real life. But they can sort of see it in porn and say, oh, maybe that is for me, maybe I'll try it, or, okay, I'm glad I saw it, but it's not for me. So, yeah, just a way of learning about things.
And does it also therefore normalise behaviours that maybe are a little bit more risky or perhaps things that we shouldn't be doing?
Yeah, that is definitely one of the concerns around porn. For example, you know, in pornography we know that very rarely do actors wear condoms. And obviously that is something that is an important part of safe sex for many people.
For all people, I would have thought.
Yes.
But it's not the only methodology anymore. And exactly. I guess when you don't even have the conversation, because it's porn, you know, you're not negotiating consent,
mm-hmm.
Which is the starting point of any encounter.
Exactly. And in pornography, most sex isn't non-consensual. Like, people appear to want things done to them and enjoy things that are happening, but there's never any negotiation of consent. And I think that when...
Well, I think there is when you actually get a paycheck.
Yes. And we're assuming that they negotiate beforehand off camera. But yeah, if people are agreeing to everything without being asked, then you can kind of assume that they're not really being asked.
And that's the norm.
Mm.
I think Mark's question about vanilla and kink is an interesting one, because young people seem to be more adventurous these days than certainly when I was growing up. And I was reasonably adventurous, shall we say. But it seems that they can trump me. And all power to them if they're doing it in a way that is seeking more information and about learning, I think.
Yeah.
But I'm talking about adults. Yeah, well, yeah, but it's not always that safe. You know, the internet can be a dark place, and sometimes when you're looking for that information, I mean, I remember some of the earliest encounters I had as well. When you're looking for that information, it's not always... You're not always talking to who you think you're looking or who you think you're talking to.
Mm. And, you know, a lot of the negatives in sex, or like the work sometimes that is involved in preparing, is often not shown. So, you know, they might
ain't
show
that the truth.
Yeah, they you know, leave out the part where you need to use lube and stuff like that.
Or mistakes happen.
Yes, exactly.
That aren't pretty. Yes, they're conveniently edited, and it's all neat and whatever.
Yeah.
Was there any research into the depictions of, I guess, people in porn as opposed to real life, you know, the groomed, immaculate, body beautiful with the massive cock, whatever.
Yeah.
Did you look at that in your research?
Yeah, so quite a few people mentioned sort of body image concerns, And for women particularly, it was about body hair, and right. for men as well to some extent. But actually, people didn't tend to mention things like penis size and breast size. They mostly talked about just sort of general body shape and I guess fat as well. Like they'd all worry like my flabby stomach rather than my small penis kind of thing was the issues that they kind of talked about.
Body image seems to be a huge issue amongst younger people these days.
And what about sexting? We've spoken a few times on, you know, different shows about the huge number of young people, or people just in general, just so easily swapping nudes, swapping videos. Was that discussed at all?
Yeah, I've done other research about sexting with young people, same age group, and pretty much this.
Surely that the graph of that must be.
Yeah, definitely. So we've been doing this research for a few years, and it does seem to be becoming more and more common.
Of course, the awkward space with that is if they're underage and they're doing it, potentially they're distributing child porn.
Yeah, and that was particularly when I first started doing the research, that was a real concern. So the laws in Victoria, at least, have changed slightly so that if you are in a consensual relationship with that person, even if it's a picture of yourself, it's not necessarily considered child pornography, but the laws in other states haven't necessarily changed to match that.
And there's age variances that apply to that.
Yeah. Well, so child pornography is anyone under 18, but the age of sexual consent varies quite a bit between different states and, there's sort of complications around the rules. So it's
check with your local authorities before you proceed. Ask your school principal. or don't do it. I mean, they say don't put anything on the internet if you don't want it to exist forever. Yet so much of people's private lives are on display anyway. There is a real disconnect between my age group and the young kids of today and just pouring everything out on the internet that is ultimately very private.
Yeah, I think, kids kind of have a lot of them have a different understanding of, you know, what's private life and what's public life than sort of the older generation did. That doesn't mean that they're, you know, stupid enough to share their credit card details and all that stuff online, which some people seem to think is what privacy means, but... I think they're just a lot more open about their day-to-day lives.
Not my credit card details, but here's my cock.
Yeah. Well, yes. You want to do more research into this. You're going to dig deeper into the mental health connection.
Yeah. Yeah.
Anything else you want out of it?
Well, we'd like to do more research into, I guess, the what to do about the issue. So, yes, a lot of people are saying education's the answer, and probably I think it is, but we don't have any proof of that. There's never been any studies that have actually evaluated whether.
And what does that look like?
Yeah, exactly. Like, you know, one teacher could implement porn education that's absolutely terrible and makes kids completely ashamed of all sexuality and or like increases pornography watching. But so any porn education isn't necessarily better than none. Bad education won't help at all.
But in the short of it and the long of it, if you're male, you're watching it. Dr. Megan Lim, thank you so much for joining us on Hide and Seek tonight.
Thank you.
Thank you for your insights into a difficult area, and I look forward to more of your research.
I'm on fire.
Hide and Seek.
Fireball.
You are with Dean Beck, Benny B, and Mark, the Work Experience Kid, here on Hide and Seek. When are you heading off, Mark, to Berlin?
The 28th of August, of July.
Who's counting? That's in the middle of, like, the
I'm going to Amsterdam
time.
Pride, and I'm going to Circuit Festival in Barcelona.
I want to hear more about what you want to do when you head to Europe.
Oh, well, I mean, Berlin is, you know.
You've been there before.
I have been to Berlin before, but...
Sounds like you went with your family before or something.
Well, no, my first time in Berlin, I actually went on an exchange. Oh, it was a high school exchange.
Okay.
It was my first time. My second time was a little... Go on.
Sorry, let me just process that. A high school exchange in Berlin. and your parents approved that. Good on them.
Well, the high school exchange was to Munich, but we had a week in Berlin as part of that.
Qualifies.
Mm.
Right.
So then the second time I went to Berlin was... Munich's actually really nice.
That's not really what I was asking.
Oh. Munich, yeah, the scene there was interesting. The last time I was there was actually part of a uni thing, but I made a point of going out on a Saturday night and hung out in the neighborhood.
It's very
uni,
isn't it?
Yeah, it was different. Mm. I don't really know how to describe
it. Not Berlin.
It. No, it's certainly not Berlin.
So you had a week in Berlin as a high school student.
I did Berlin Pride last time I was in Berlin.
At age?
And that was amazing. That was 2012, so I can't even work out how old I was, but it was recent.
20-something. And that's pretty big, Berlin Pride.
Yeah, Berlin Pride was massive. Like the whole, under the Brandenburg Gate, and then the street from Brandenburg Gate was just full of stages and DJs and
just party in the street.
Yeah, basically. And then party in the nightclubs that night.
Right.
And very big hangover the next day.
Indeed, indeed. Now, Andrew the Apprentice, on his last trip to Berlin, told me that there was a nude beach somewhere around there where they were policing people for not being nude enough.
It doesn't surprise me, because you go to the Tiergarten, the big botanic gardens, and there's like people sunbaking nude.
Sure, but you don't expect an inspector to come up and say, get your gear off.
Well, maybe.
You're not nude enough.
Well, sounds like Disneyland.
You've got Disneyland. The laboratories on your list.
Yeah, I'm going to laboratory.
Been to the Kit Kat Club?
No, but that's also on the list.
Right, okay.
Going to be a little bit more explorative this time, I
good
think.
Good for you.
Yeah.
For
you.
And it's
that's a good
just
point.
A holiday?
Yeah.
You'll enjoy every bit of it.
Can't wait to get out of Melbourne's winter, I tell you.
Well, lovely to have you on the show tonight, Mark. Thank you very
thank
much
you.
For your
thank
input.
You.
Benny B, always a delight.
What can you say?
Yeah, what can you say? There will be a podcast of this show available for download from joy.org.au/hideandseek. Thank you, David. Thank you, David. Thank you, David. And Andrew the Apprentice will be back in a couple of weeks. But next week, are you on deck?
Possibly. Who knows?
We'll find out then.
Tune in and see.
Follow us on all of the social medias. Just check out our Joy webpage for all that. I'm Dean Beck. Follow me on Twitter at Dean Beck On Air. Until next time, keep well.
Night night.
Take care. Bye for now.
You want diversity?
Why don't you stop dressing me up like a mermaid and making me dance for you while you go and smoke crack in your bedroom and have sex with some guy I don't even know on my dad's bed?
And let the Alpine blast riding around.
You're on Hide and Seek.
Joy 94.9.
Thanks for listening to another Joy podcast, brought to you by Australia's LGBTQIA+ community media organisation, Joy. Help us keep Joy on air. Head to joy.org.au. Joy, a diverse sound for a diverse community.